Colonel Gilmore, Real 8. Now, the next thing I think you remember is when you were wounded quite near to Belsen. Could you give us the scene as to how it actually happened?
Well, this was at the end of the day, and it was my job as second in command to get the regiment parked for the night.
Now, this is the 10th of April.
And I had parked my own tank and had gone over to where A Squadron were coming in order to tell them where to go. And we were still worried about air attack, and so we tended to harbour under trees if we could. And I was directing A Squadron as to where they were to park when, unfortunately, somebody fired a gun in one of the tanks, which gun hadn't been unloaded, and the shell hit a tree. Soon after it left the gun, and it was an HE shell, and it burst, and I got a bit in the groin, and one of the drivers of the tanks alongside where I was actually killed in the tank.
And, were you knocked over? I mean, how badly were you wounded?
Well, I had just blood. I was hit in the groin, and the thing was bleeding fairly profusely. And so,
did you know what had happened, or did you think you'd been air attacked? Or
I didn't really know particularly what had happened. No.
And what happened next then? How did they get you evacuated?
So I was taken down to a field hospital. This happened in the evening, you see, sort of 7 o'clock, 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And I was taken down to a field hospital. And then the next day I was evacuated to a hospital in Belgium.
Now, did you see the colonel before you left? Because apparently he was very cross, to say the least, about this.
Yes, I did, I think. I don't remember it very well.
Now, were you operated on early, or did they just patch your wound at first?
No, I was in hospital for several days before I was operated on. And the first thing I remember when I came round was that they told me that President Roosevelt had died. So that gives you the date that it was.
And how were you? How had the operation been a success?
It was such a small bit of shell that they left it in, as they said they would do more harm than good digging it out. And I can confirm that because years later I had an operation for varicose veins. And the surgeon had me x-rayed before he did the operation, and the x-ray showed up a bit of shell in the groin and the top of my leg.
And after your operation, what happened then? After your operation, what then?
Well, I was in hospital in Belgium for a bit, and then I was flown back to this country, and landed up in Addenbrooke's Hospital in Cambridge.
Which hospital?
Addenbrooke's in Cambridge. And they looked at me and said there was nothing much they could do. And so I was given sick leave. And I arrived home here 2 days before the war ended. And I was here at home when the war ended.
How did you feel on V-Day and how did you celebrate it?
Well, I was very pleased and happy.
Was there a celebration? Did you have a party, or how did you celebrate?
No, we didn't do anything very much.
Were you able to walk? How badly were you
affected? I could walk quite well.
How badly were you affected by your wound?
Not really at all, very much.
So, you were on sick leave. How long were you on sick leave for? How long were you on sick leave for?
Well, I was on sick leave for about 6 to 8 weeks, and then I got leave to take part as a candidate in the general election.
Now, for which party? Who are you standing for?
I worked for the Conservatives in Clackmannan and East Stirling. without any success.
What was it like as a in that election? Because that's quite a well-known election. It's the Labour landslide, wasn't it? What do you remember of the election campaign and how you organised and what sort of opposition you received?
Well, it was quite difficult because there was still petrol rationing and therefore getting about wasn't very, very easy. And you had to rely on public meetings, and again people couldn't travel very much, and so the meetings weren't very well attended.
What was the average meeting like?
Very quiet.
And what form would it take? Would you just make a speech and that be it, or would there be question and answer? Or would more than one person make a speech?
Yes, I think that one of the things was that there were no young men because they were all away in the army or the forces, and you had either a female or elderly electorate on the whole.
And what sort of a seat was it that you were standing? Was it a safe Labour seat, or how were you expecting?
It was a fairly safe Labour seat, yes.
So you weren't expecting to win?
Well, not unless there was a big swing to the Conservatives.
Were you expecting a swing to the Conservatives? I mean, Churchill had just won the war.
Well, I think one was disappointed that with Churchill having done so much that he didn't get more votes for his party, as you might say, than he did.
Was there any sign of voter dissatisfaction with the Conservatives before the election?
I don't think so.
So as you were going round, you weren't expecting a swing against the Conservatives?
No, I was surprised that we didn't do better than we did.
And so your main campaigning would be meetings. What was there any other campaigning you did? Would they have leaflets, I presume, for you?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And who was your agent, and how did you work with your agent?
I don't remember much about it now.
And what about the election night? What was that like? The day of the election.
Nothing in particular. And the count didn't take place until quite a bit after the election because of the business of people having to vote by post. So that you didn't get what you get in a normal election where you have the count in the evening immediately after the vote closed. It wasn't until days later.
And how did you feel once the result came through?
Well, disappointed.
And what happened next? You were on sick leave, you'd been given permission to fight this election. What happened next?
Well, then I was given sick leave, continued sick leave after the election.
There was no question of you returning to your unit or another unit. So you were on continued sick leave. What happened then?
So I just was on sick leave until my date for demobilisation came up, which was in November of 1945.
And how was that decided? How was your demobilisation date decided? What was that based on?
This was based on you got credits if you had done pre-war service in the Territorial Army. You got credits which got you demobilised earlier, which was then, I think, coupled to your age to set your demobilisation date. So I got a pretty early demobilisation date.
When you were demobilised, what state were you in physically? I mean, had you fully recovered?
Oh, I was quite fit by this time.
And what did you plan to do? I mean, you'd been working in, you know, in the brewing industry, well, whiskey, or I think it was. But what did you plan to do?
I went back in January of 46, I went back to work in the brewery in Alloa.
So what about the two months in between? Did you just have some more sick leave or holiday? And when you were returned to work, did you find it difficult to acclimatise to civilian life?
No.
Had your military service affected you mentally or physically in any way, would you say?
No.
Now, did you return to the territorials, to the Fife and Forfar? Because I believe you did.
When the Territorial Army was reconstituted in 1947, I was asked to be the commanding officer of the reconstituted 504th Yeomanry.
That's the whole of the... that's what it was. It wasn't 1st and 2nd then, it was just the 504th. Where were they based at that time? Where were they based? Were there still those old squadron bases?
Well, the regimental headquarters were in Cooper, as opposed to having been in Kirkcaldy, which they were before the war. But there was the regimental headquarters was a Nissen hut in the car park in Cooper.
They didn't have the barracks they have now?
No. We got that about 2 or 3 years later.
And what was it? How difficult was it to re-establish from... Because it would be from scratch, wouldn't it?
Well, no, there were plenty of people, you know, who had served and survived the war who were volunteered to come back again. And then, of course, we got the sons of some of the members of the regiment, particularly sons of those who had been killed.
And what was your basic schedule as commanding officer? What did you have to do on a weekly and monthly and yearly basis during that period?
Well, we had to we had got squadron headquarters in Dundee, which was a new site because in pre-war days, being 504th again, the 4th Squadron had been based in 4th, but when the Territorial Army was doubled, the 2nd Regiment set up in Dundee, and so when we were reconstituted, we actually set up the squadron headquarters for the 4th Squadron in Dundee as opposed to 4th.
But what were your duties?
Well, to visit the different squadrons on their drill nights. The squadrons had different drill nights so that the permanent staff could move from one place to the other. And we had a squadron headquarters in Dunfermline, Kirkcaldy, Leven, Cooper and Dundee.
Now, how often would you do that? I mean, would you go to one a week or would you try and go to more than one a week?
No, one a week.
And you just inspect the thing. And what about the... What tank were they in? Or were they in armoured cars, weren't they? No, we're not quite sure what armoured car they had, and you don't remember. But did that make a difference to you, the armoured cars? Would you rather have had tanks?
No, I think that we were pleased to be back in the reconnaissance role rather than in a tank role.
Why was that? What was better about reconnaissance?
Well, it was what we had been an armoured car company the whole way from 1920 through to shortly before the outbreak of war. And we were going back to our traditional role.
Now, the annual camps seem to have been quite ambitious. The first one was at Stobbs near Hyck, and then you went overseas to Northern Ireland, Omagh. Do you remember these camps? What would the camps be like? Were they like the pre-war camps, or were they different?
Well, the first camp was at at Hoyt, and we were which was a Hutted camp, and it was quite good, and we had field firing down at a range at Dunbar, firing out to sea.
And how efficient would you judge that the men were in comparison with the pre-war territorials?
Well, unlike pre-war, we had plenty of people with wartime experience, and so that we had at least 50% experienced soldiers, whereas in the 1930s there was no one left from the 1480 war, and we were all untrained volunteers, whereas in the initial stages of when the regiment was reconstituted, you had at least 50% with wartime experience.
Now the next camp, why Omagh? Why did they go to Northern Ireland? That seemed a big trek.
I don't know particularly why we were sent to Northern Ireland.
It wasn't a matter of choice then, you were sent there.
It was just decreed by the war. And we did get this business of having a camp at home, and we had a camp at the old airfield at Crail, so that we could have, as you might say, a local camp and have a regimental sports day and visit by families and that sort of thing, which was very essential to keeping the spirit of the regiment alive and associated with the local populace.
Now, after the Crail camp, 1950, you stood down and were succeeded by Colonel Hutchison. What made you decide to stand down, or was it just that you'd come to the end of your service term?
Well, I think the term of office normally for the commanding officer seemed to be 3 years, and I had a 1 year extension, and when that year's extension rang out, it was time to hand over.
Were you sorry to leave?
Well, I was quite sorry to leave, but I had done my stint. And,
Now, did that sever your connection with the Fife and Forfar? Because you'd be no longer an officer with them, would you, once you'd stopped being colonel?
No, but of course we had regimental association branches in Cooper and Kirkcaldy and Dundee, and always had an annual dinner and that sort of thing to keep the regiment together, as I say.
Do you think that's the regimental association, is it important to you?
Oh, yes.
Because especially now, 50 years later, it remains an important part of your life.
It's still going very strongly.
Thank you very much.